Mad Magazine, that staple of adolescent skepticism for 60 years, was born on the streets of the Bronx. Literally. While he was still in grade school, Harvey Kurtzman, inspired by the cartooning of Rube Goldberg, drew comic strips called Mikey and Ikey on neighborhood sidewalks. At the High School of Music and Art, he met many of the people he would collaborate with in the future and with whom he would set the world of comic books and regular culture on its ear. Tonight, the Society of Illustrators on Manhattan's Upper East Side will host a panel discussion called Celebrating Kurtzman, featuring a number of his colleagues, including my next guests, Al Jaffe, who's been a regular contributor to Mad Magazine for 57 years and is best known for the Mad Folden, cartoonist Arnold Roth, who worked with Mr. Kurtzman at the magazines Trump, Humbug, and Help, and at Playboy, and Drew Friedman, who was one of Mr. Kurtzman's students at the School of Visual Arts in the late 1970s. His work has appeared in Raw Magazine, The New York Observer, The New Yorker, and Mad. And I'm very pleased to welcome you all to our show. So you, all of you, met Harvey Kurtzman under different circumstances and at different points of his life, didn't you?
Yes.
So, Al, you're the one who met him first. What was your introduction to him?
I did not meet Harvey Kurtzman in the High School of Music and Art because I was a senior when he was a freshman. He came in, but I knew of him because I and a fellow who eventually worked for Mad named Will Elder.
A great artist.
Terrific. Willie and I were teenage buddies. We went to junior high school together and lived near each other. And Harvey, I went to work for Timely Comics under Stan Lee, and
the man who gave us Spider-Man and all of those.
Oh, I was going to mention that while I was in music and art, Willie and I were known as these crazy cartoonists. Music and art essentially was a fine art school. One day, Willie and I were sitting in the cafeteria, and someone came along and said, "You two better look to your laurels." I thought it said it to me, but it, I remember now it was to both of us. And we looked, and we said, "What do you mean?" There's this freshman kid, I think his name is Harvey Kurtzman. He did a big drawing of the freshman boat ride, and it's up in the gym bulletin board. So we went up to look at it, and we were blown away because Harvey Kurtzman had almost everyone who was on the trip was on that ship.
But the way I understand Harvey Kurtzman's role is that he was mostly an editor. In fact, Will Elder was the artist on Little Annie Fanny, and he wrote the strip later at Playboy. Was he a cartoonist first?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, that's my understanding. He always drew, and he, even as an editor, he did tons of drawings. He would lay out the pages. Beautiful, eventually, with Sanny Fanny, beautiful color sketches. But they had all the spirit that said, right, not the detail, of course, but
So he was kind of storyboarding things and then bring in other artists, yes, to do them in great detail.
But unfortunately, he didn't want to really do any drawing anymore. And it's true, he operated. But he wrote Annie Fanny. I mean, he was always a writer. And, of course, being a very good cartoonist, he wrote and saw at the same time.
Well, I always associate him with satire and parody. But early in his career, he wrote and edited the Two-Fisted Tales and Frontline Combat War comic books. Was that just because that's where the jobs were, Drew?
He wound up at EC Comics working for Bill Gaines, and he first edited the war comics because he had been a veteran of World War II, and he did incredible research into his war stories. He lived them, and he did incredible he was spent a lot of time in the libraries, like researching them, and he had to get everything as specific as possible. And then he realized he was editing two comics for Bill Gaines, and Al Feldstein, the other editor at EC, was editing seven, so he was making a little more money. So Harvey Kurtzman approached Bill Gaines to about doing a humor comic book and created Mad Magazine, or Mad Comic Book. So all of a sudden, you know, Mad became it just caught fire little by little. And you know, but Harvey Kurtzman was the brains behind Mad Magazine. He edited Mad and wrote everything in Mad, the early issues.
Well, this was around the time that EC and other comic book companies came under fire, the Senate hearings and that followed the publication of Frederick Wertheim's anti-comics book called Seduction of the Innocent. Just the other day I read that. It turns out that all of his research was fudged, but nonetheless, did this affect Harvey's work at EC? Did it affect your work as well, Al?
It did not affect my work because I was doing animal strips like Super Rabbit or teenage things like Patsy Walker. But I don't want to let pass one thing about Harvey Kurtzman, which when I was working at Timely Comics under Stan Lee.
Did that later become Marvel?
That later became Marvel. But prior to Marvel, I was in a room with about six or seven other cartoonists. We were the humor and teenage people. Another room with whom we did battle at lunchtime was the superhero room with Captain America and the Human Torch. But regardless of what side you were on, every couple of weeks or so, a kid would come in named Harvey Kurtzman carrying something called, what was this strip?
Hey, Look.
Hey, Look. And everybody would run into the editor's room to look at the latest Hey, Look! By Harvey Kurtzman.
What made it special?
It was so offbeat. I mean,
It was off the wall.
It wasn't a build-up towards a gag. Everything in it was like an animated cartoon with holes opening up in the ground and, you know, things coming out and stuff like that.
So he was an innovator. Later, in fact, didn't he publish the first full-length book that was comics? I think he did that somewhere in the 50s.
He was an innovator. He was ahead of the curve. He created Mad and Mad Magazine, then left to start a magazine for Hugh Hefner called Trump, which lasted two issues. And then that led to Humbug, which included Al Jaffe and Arnold Roth as regular contributors. And then that led to Help magazine. So, you know,
He want to speak for yourself here.
No, Trump was out of business before it was released.
Had nothing to do with Donald.
Huh?
Nothing to do with Donald.
No, it had to do with the bank calling in the loan to Hefner because Collier's had folded at that time. And so there was really a lot of trepidation. I just wanted to say something about the Kefauver hearings on the comic books that Harvey and I, and that followed the McCarthy, they had to come up with something in Washington, and that's what they came up with. But Harvey and I particularly enjoyed. They had one camera, and the camera would be on the witness or whoever was speaking. And they would say something, and the camera had to pan back across this huge room to Kefauver, who, once the camera was on him, would look aghast. But, you know, it was about seven beats. And that's, to me and to Harvey, was the summation of that whole thing.
You're saying it was show business.
Yeah.
But when Mad was created, this is a satirical comic book that would parody popular culture with an added social critique. Was there a sense that its largest audience would be adolescent boys?
No, Harvey never dumbed down his work. He respected the audience so much as he aimed Mad for adults and children. It wasn't limited to just children. Over the years, it became more aimed towards younger people. But at the beginning, it was that's one of the great lessons I got from Harvey as a teacher, is that just don't underestimate your audience. Don't dumb down your work. And that really resonated with me.
And also, the Mad Magazine started out as a comic book. And essentially, what he was doing at the beginning was satirizing comics. He did Super Duper Man. He did Bat Boy and Reuben. And he also did he took, for example,
like Mary Worth. I remember he made
Mary,
fun of
how much is Mary Worth, you know, and then as it switched over to a regular magazine, because Harvey saw the writing on the wall, he's going to run out of comic strips to make fun of. So how about making fun of movies and advertising and so on? So he fought with Bill Gaines to move from a 10-cent comic to a 25-cent real magazine. And they did furious battle over this because Bill tended to be satisfied with, you know, the money stream.
Well, he was always making fun of what his bosses were doing. He later made fun of Hugh Hefner's Playboy image when he did Little Annie Fanny. For Playboy.
Yes, he made fun of everything.
Now, how did he attract, the people like you and Will Elder and Wally Wood and Jack Davis and all the other people who became legends in the comic book business to him? Or were they just working for the same companies and wound up doing stuff for Mad?
I was not in the comic book industry, and I had been a freelancer, which I am to until today. When I first met Harvey, he had a Trump. Ed Fisher, who was a New Yorker cartoonist, told me about this magazine. It didn't exist. They were starting it. And I went there, and I remember he had a list of 14 names on a strip of paper. And most of which, but I remembered the names, and they all became terrific cartoonists.
Was it difficult to break into the business at that time?
Not for me. I was already starting to do fairly major work. This was 56, 57, 56. And as a matter of fact, the person who introduced me to Mad Magazine, I think the first issue I saw was the third one, was Paul Desmond, the alto sax player with Dave Brubeck. And they were traveling all the time, and he would pick up interesting things in the newsstand.
Was Harvey bitter about the fact that he had left Mad?
No. No.
He felt it was time to move on?
I knew Harvey quite well, and I'm sure that Drew and Arnie also knew him quite well, but under different circumstances. Harvey was a sort of crazy idealist. The art was everything. Money, when he demanded money from Bill Gaines, or he was going to leave, he was demanding the money so that he could spend it on better art, better paper, better people. Harvey was not greedy. He was not interested in wealth or anything like that. He was only interested in art.
I wish we'd had this conversation before Bill Gaines had been a guest on the show many years ago, because I could have asked him some of these questions about this. But meanwhile, I have this opportunity to talk with three men who will be participating in an event tonight, moderated by Peter Cooper, Drew Friedman, Al Jaffe, Arnold Roth. It's called Celebrating Kurtzman, a panel discussion with them, and Robert Grossman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at the Society of Illustrators at 6:30 tonight. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. And we are back with three of the participants in a panel discussion that's being moderated tonight by Peter Cooper. They are Drew Friedman, Al Jaffe, and Arnold Roth, who, along with Robert Grossman, will be at the Society of Illustrators starting at 6:30 tonight, celebrating Harvey Kurtzman because he was such an important figure in the history of comic books.
Definitely.
Possibly the most important. I think he's had more influence on a generation, several generations of cartoonists, than just about anybody I can think of. If you think about the people he discovered, including Robert Crumb and even Gloria Steinem, who was his assistant at Help Magazine, and Terry Gilliam, Harvey introduced Terry Gilliam to John Cleese, basically forming Monty Python.
So he was a matchmaker as well.
Yeah, but he also had an eye for discovering talent, and he also had an aura about him where people just wanted to be around him. The best people wanted to be around him.
Well, you met him when he was already something of a legendary figure. Why was he teaching at the School of Visual Arts? Didn't he have a magazine at the time?
No, this was the mid-70s. He started teaching at the School of Visual Arts around 73. I took the class in 78. The only reason I went to School of Visual Arts is because Harvey Kurtzman was a teacher there. Will Eisner was also a teacher, and Art Spiegelman. Arnold Roth was also a teacher. They had an amazing lineup of teachers, but Harvey Kurtzman was the center of the week for me and so many other students, including a cartoonist who became established later, like Kaz and Mark Newgarden, several others. But his class was like ground zero for us. You know, and just to be around him, just to be in his presence was amazing to me, because he was a hero of mine.
How did you wind up doing work for Mad Magazine?
It was my childhood goal to be one of the usual gang of idiots. People would say, "What do you want to do when you grow up, Drew?" I said, "I want to be an idiot." And, that was my goal. But then,
have you succeeded?
Yes. I'm a legitimate idiot, as my wife can attest. But for years, I wanted to work for National Lampoon, then I wanted to get more into underground comics, do work for Raw Magazine and Robert Crumb's Weirdo, and Mad. I kind of pushed that aside until the editor called me all of a sudden and said, "Would you like to do a page for Mad?" And I said, "Yeah, sure."
Well, it's still being published.
Yeah.
How do you keep that kind of thing relevant and fresh?
It's 60 years old, actually, this year. Last year it turned 60. It's great to bring in new talent, new writers, and, of course, Al Jaffe's been doing the Mad Folder now for 45 years.
And can you tell us about that, Al? How did that develop? What are the origins of the Folder?
Well, I've always been a freelance cartoonist, so you wake up every morning trying to figure out something to do to pay the mortgage. So one day I surrounded myself with a bunch of magazines, and the thing that came through was Playboy, of course, had this big, colorful fold-out, and National Geographic on occasion had it, and other magazines as well. And I kept looking at those fold-outs, and when you do anything for Mad, what kicks in is which way do we go to satirize this? So you go in the opposite direction. And I thought to myself, they have these big, fancy, colorful fold-outs. Mad will have this cheap black and white fold in. And it was a one-shot gag. I quickly did a very simple folding thing, took it into the editor, Al Felsi, and I said, "Al, you're not going to buy this because it'll mutilate the magazine." But Al was always interested in mechanical things, especially, and deviating from the normal. And he grabbed it and he ran into Bill Gaines, came back to me and said, "We're going to do it. If they mutilate the magazine and they want to have one for their collection, they'll buy another magazine." So
But it costs more money to print a fold-in and a fold-out.
Not at that time. It was in ordinary black and white, and they put it on the inside back cover, which was printed in black and white anyway.
And it's still a feature of the magazine.
I think I've missed maybe three fold-ins in the last 48 years.
Do you find yourself thinking, oh, gee, what am I going to do this time? Now it's a bi-monthly, so you have a little more time to come up with a new one.
When you work for MAD, you just don't do too much thinking.
A listener has asked us on Twitter why there are no women in the management at MAD. There have been some women who've worked as artists.
There's been
there?
A lot of female contributors over the years. As far as management, there are some female employees up there over the years as well. So, as far as I know, yeah.
Well, what can you tell us about the creation of Alfred E. Newman and his motto, "What Me Worry"?
Well, that was Harvey's innovation, actually, Alfred E. Newman. He's the first guy, the editor, to use Alfred E. Newman as a mascot in MAD before he left MAD. But that image, that idiot face image, had been around for a good 50 years, used for advertising.
At Atlantic City, every boardwalk novelty place had stacks of those.
Similar to the Coney Island face. But that image had been around, and Harvey was the first to pick up on it and actually use it in MAD. And then Al Feltzing commissioned Norman Mingo to do a full-color painting of it, and the rest is history.
Again, it was Harvey Kurtzman's one-shot idea. He was doing a back cover of MAD when it was a comic book, in which the advertisements, there was a certain company advertised things like poopy cushions and things that you squirt with and stuff like that. And he needed a funny face for one of his ads, and he found this Alfred E. Newman lookalike.
He named him Alfred E. Newman, too.
Yeah, well, and that came from the movie industry.
Yeah. Alfred Newman, the
musical
conductor.
Director.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, if I could jump back to Al's description of Harvey, which I thought was perfect, but Harvey always, or in many cases, worked the what I call the Candide vein, like Lil Abner. When he did a lot of continuity things, the hero was always completely naive and was wandering around in this degenerate world.
Little Annie Fanny.
That's Goodman Beaver. Annie Fanny, if you go back through practically all of his major figures, that's...
Now, Al,
they were Harvey, of course.
They were all Harvey.
Yeah.
Now, Al, you've said serious people my age are dead. How old are you now?
92.
Okay. And the New York Times called Drew Friedman the Vermeer of the Borscht Belt.
Right, right. I have to live up to that.
Al, Arnold, you're just great.
He's a great saxophonist.
Drew Friedman, Al Jaffe, and Arnold Roth, among others, will be celebrating the life and works of Harvey Kurtzman tonight at 6:30 at 128 East 63rd Street. For more information, or to buy tickets, go to our show page at WNYC.org. And Arnold Roth will be on a panel at the MoCA Arts Festival on Saturday, April 6th at 4:30 and the Lexington Avenue Army and 68th Street. Find out all about that on our show page at WNYC.org.